Thank you, Ralph. And now a special presentation on the significance of Founders Day. We will please welcome Josh.
Good afternoon. My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic. Today we celebrate the 82nd birthday of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, which has given us and countless others the joy and freedom of a new life. The birth of Alcoholics Anonymous is agreed upon as June 10th, 1935. This was not the day that Bill W. and Dr. Bob met and shared their stories. That was May 11th. After that came 3 weeks of intense work by the two on some new ideas that Bill had picked up, followed by Dr. Bob's last relapse. June 10th then became Dr. Bob's sobriety date, as well as the day of AA's founding. Founders Day was not an isolated lightning bolt from our higher power. Four founding moments in AA history led up to it. These form a chain of events that resulted in the birth of AA. The first was Dr. Carl Jung's conversation with Roland H. in 1931, which is recounted on page 27 of the Big Book. That conversation led directly to the second event, Ebby T.'s November 1934 visit with Bill W. The third was Bill W.'s spiritual experience and the discovery of William James in Towns Hospital in December 1934. The fourth event was the interaction between Bill W. and Dr. Bob through May and June of 1935. These events culminated in the founding moment of June 10th, 1935. For the individual AA member, his or her story is of the highest value, what it used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. Our history as a fellowship is of equal importance, so we do not forget our humble beginning, one drunk helping another drunk so that both may stay sober. By the grace of God, that has not changed since 1935, and that is what we celebrate today. Let us remain in prayerful gratitude to God, our founders, and all who have came before us. Let us play in gratitude on this sober day that we have come to celebrate together. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. It is now time for our featured speaker of the day. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance and sober alcoholics around the world, will you give a warm Tulare County welcome to Sammy R. from Tulare.
Sammy Ramsey, an alcoholic. It's so exciting. Today is Founders Day, and I love that you read that portion of gave us that information. June 10th. How blessed we are to have this. And to me, it doesn't matter how you came in here, if you were rich or poor or whatever. We got this program given to us on a silver platter. Sorry. It turns out we start crying when things are really important to me. And really, this is just free. We don't have to work to get it. We have to work to get sober. But we don't have to go out and figure out how to get sober. It's all given to us. It's in the books. And it's in the people that you meet here, whether they're drunk or sober. We have this gift for us. So June 10th is a big deal. And I'm sorry I'm such a lightweight that I cry a lot. It's rough being up here for me. You know, it's rough being, it's hard for me. I don't want to bruise my so fragile ego. I want you to like me. Then there's that part of me that doesn't give a shit. And I swear a lot, so it's like, hey, there's children here, so I got to try not to swear because the shit just comes out automatically with me. I'm Italian. I use my hands too much. And I find sometimes people watching my hands instead of paying attention to my eyes or whatever. So this is rough for me, and I'm glad you all love me. You have to love me because, you know, you got to stay sober, so you have to love me no matter what. And sometimes that's really hard to do. I never really know where to start. My story is pretty boring. It's not anything, you know, you're not going to get any lightning bolts of wisdom or, oh, my God, you know, she did this or she did that. I did the same thing as most of you. I was born. I became an alcoholic. I got in a lot of trouble. It ruined my life. I know people that can drink and drink and drink and it not affect their lives. They're able to conduct business, take care of their families. You know, they may be a heavy drinker, but it doesn't affect them and their people around, their folks around them. It doesn't affect their soul. For me, I never really fit in. I never fit in. I was born in Madera, okay? My family had a farming operation out by Firebaugh. So I lived in Firebaugh up until mid-fourth grade. But up until mid-fourth grade, I was back and forth to Santa Cruz because my grandparents bought a home there. So I lived in the valley, visited Santa Cruz, and then lived in Santa Cruz from fourth grade on. So I didn't really fit in Firebaugh because I had this ocean Santa Cruz thing in me. And I didn't fit in Santa Cruz because the egotistical bastards of the northern part of the state don't like the Central Valley. You know, and this goes way back when, you know, beatniks and surfers and... They just look down on us, and I think if you know anything about the whole water situation that we have, maybe you agree with that, maybe you don't, I don't know, but I never really fit in either of those groups. And as I got older, I mean, I'm product of the 60s and 70s, and, you know, Twiggy was the thing then. If you wanted to be sexy, you had to be like a thin rail like Twiggy, and I was never that. I'm half Italian, so I never was thin. And then nowadays, you got to have an ass like a Kardashian, an 18-inch waist, and I don't have that either. So I'm just kind of, you know, I'm just kind of out there and getting older and not adapting to that either. So I'm kind of fucked, you know. I'm just like, I don't know. My pants don't have pockets in them, so I can't put my hands in my pockets either. So I, like I said, I was raised in Firebaugh. I'm a Firebaugh girl and Santa Cruz girl. I lived in Capitola, which used to be the begonia capital of the world. And oh, we used to have so much fun. We'd decorate those floats and we'd float them down the river to the mouth of the ocean there, and we'd got to stay up all night as kids and do that, you know, and of course I would be drinking. I do remember, but I don't remember what I had for breakfast, okay? And at work, I can't remember shit. I mean, I've had the same job for over 20 years, if you can believe that. I can't, because I'm a short-term player, but I ended up in these long-term things here. And I forget things a lot, so excuse me. What was I saying? I was, seriously, this is Founders Day, and I want to stick to being an alcoholic, but I also am a product of the 60s and 70s, so I did all those things in there to excess. And when I first got sober in AA, I needed the program of NA as well, and I lived in Visalia, went to a lot of meetings in Tulare, and at that time, this was in 1980, folks in NA weren't staying clean. A great program, you know, and it's come a long way, but when I'd lead those meetings, I wanted to use. And I always felt that I was an alcoholic first and last because I started with booze and I ended with booze. So I got clean in AA, too. I got clean here. And then now, of course, NA is, you know, well-established and people are staying clean, and it's wonderful. But back then, they weren't. And I left wanting to use so bad that it was difficult for me. So AA, for me, the steps work for everything that I'm addicted to. I came in here through FACTS, Family Alcoholism Counseling and Treatment. The president of the company wanted to call it Family Alcoholism and Farting, and anyway, that was his thing. And so I came in through that, so you can imagine what that did to me. And when I first came to Tulare, because I was living in Fresno with my brother and his family, and they told me I'd had 10 years of sobriety when I passed this program. You know, you go through this program and you get 10 years. You know, you have 10 years in like 6 months. And I really thought that. I really thought that. So I came to meetings in Tulare and in Visalia, and Betty and Bob, if those of you remember them at all, Bob said to me one time, "You don't have 10 years to have 10 years." And I was like, "Well, what the fuck are you talking about, man?" So I went back to my little group that said, "Yeah, you have 10 years, don't worry about it." Well, I finally, thank God, got to know what they were talking about. And I didn't have 10 years till I actually didn't drink for 10 years and walked through some of the pain that I had to. Um, I remember the very first time that alcohol made me feel good, made me feel better when I was in such pain. My grandparents, like I said, they had a farming operation in Fireball, and their house was so pretty. They had a bar, a regular bar in their house, and that you could close the door, and it was made of glass and lights and mirrors. And why they had a lot of parties at their place, and I would go inside there and kind of copy what I was seeing. You know, I'd make drinks, and they had a lot of Italian glass. I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but I know now it was this pretty Italian cut glass. And I would go in there and drink, and I remember the whiskey burning down my throat, and then just, you know, that thing that you get. And so I remember doing that a lot, but the time that I really felt that it changed my feelings and changed my inside was when I found out that one of my grandparents had passed away. And I think I was 14 at the time. And I was at my girlfriend's house, and we'd done all that shit where you steal your liquor from your parents and stuff. And my girlfriend had started having her period, so we'd hide it in this giant Kotex box, and we'd drink there on weekends at her house. And I remember having this huge hole in my gut and such pain that it was just impossible to feel it. I hurt so bad. And you know, when you're 14, you don't know how to react to things. And my family is fairly dysfunctional. My dad he's an alcoholic to the bone. So I grew, and my mom was an enabler and always trying to fix it. And I remember drinking on the steps in her, and she had a bedroom upstairs. I remember sitting on the stairs crying and drinking, and all of a sudden that pain went away. And I thought, okay, I feel better now. And then it never ended till I was 28, 29 years old. It always fixed it for me till it got to the point to where it didn't fix it for me. I got pregnant, got married, got divorced in that order, and then lost custody of my daughter. And that was something that, I relate to that now when women talk about losing custody of their daughters or wanting to keep them so bad. And I fought in the courts for years to keep her. And I would do things like, I remember she was living with me, and I came to on the couch, and she just was a little toddler, and a little bit older than a toddler. And I said, "How did you get home, honey?" And she said, "You drove me, Mommy." And I thought, fuck, I picked her up from kindergarten in a blackout, you know, with kids in the parking lot and stuff. And I remember that today, every day. I never forget that. And it keeps me remembering, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, and I can ruin everything with just a drink. And when I finally, this time, got sober in April 1st, 1980, when I did my inventory, I quit blaming my ex and his family for losing her. And I quit blaming the members of my family who passed away for leaving me. And I finally took responsibility and accountability for what I had done with my life and what I had done to her life. Thankfully and gratefully, she's turned out great. She's in her 40s now. And I've been feeling resentment towards her because she doesn't come see me. You know, she's that Northern California arrogant group of people that don't like the valley, you know, so she doesn't come very often. And I was angry the other day, a couple weeks ago, and I thought, God damn it, why doesn't she come visit me? I always have to go there, blah, blah, blah. None of that's true, but it was true in my head. And I came across some paperwork from our attorney, and she was going to Mexico one year when my granddaughter was a baby, and gave full custody to me should something happen to her. And, that was a huge gift. To be trusted with her. I feel like I got back what I lost. I still have that thing in my heart, not being able to raise my daughter, but to know that she trusts us and loves us is a gift that I never thought I could get. And that was over 20 years ago, and I still cry about it because I'm so grateful. But this is how I stay sober, is that I don't forget what I did and what happened and what God has given me. I don't want to talk a whole lot about drinking because we all know how to do that. But for purposes of identification, you don't have to do what we have done. If you're new here and you have never been thrown in jail, or you have been thrown in jail and you are at the lowest level of whatever you think a person should be, it doesn't matter. AA meets you wherever you are. It meets you wherever you are, and it will give you what you need to be where you need to be in life. And I went to jail numerous times. Again, being from Santa Cruz, they're pretty liberal, and I kept getting custody of my daughter and kept losing it again and kept going in and out of jail and out of jail. And that was just a way of life for me, and never really thought much of it other than it was always somebody else's fault. And when I was living like that, I didn't really have a sense of my family or a sense of belonging to anything or anyone. So I just isolated myself. I drank with a lot of people and partied a lot, but finally it quit working for me, and I was by myself, and I didn't come out of my house for a period of months. And thankfully, my brother came and got me. They were calling and got no answer and stuff. Anyway, they came and got me and took me to Fresno, of all places, where I went through this treatment center. And I was in and out of treatment because I just couldn't stay sober. And then the last time I got sober here in Visalia and was working at that place that gave me 10 years of sobriety with when I had about a week. And what they pounded into my head, and what you guys pounded into my head, was that I had to work the steps. You know, I was young when I came in. I was 28, 29 years old, and I didn't have any wrinkles and shit. I looked old, but then after I got sober, we get young again. You know, when we're young, we get youthful again. We get that glint in our eye. We get that good color in our face. We get that booze out of our system, and we're loving life, and we become beautiful, men and women. So I always like to, my thing about being I don't know who I was or whatever. I always could skate by a lot with. I guess I used my youth to my advantage a lot. But I had this guy in AA told me one time. He said, "If you think I'm going to tell you everything is okay, I'm not. You are fucked up, and you are a user, and you are an abuser." And I was like, "Well, fuck you." I mean, he was a big motherfucker too, and I was like, "Well, fuck you." And I walked away from him, and that son of a bitch was right, you know. And I think I was working him, you know, probably just some shit that I always did. And he didn't fall for it, bastard. And he said, "Everyone around here has been telling you to work the steps, and you don't work the steps. You think you're too fucking good to do the steps and to walk through any kind of pain." And I had no conception of what he was talking about, none. So then when I finally decided to work the steps, when I'd really had enough of being sick and tired, I got in my car. I had this sponsor. She was a year sober, and to me, oh my God, she walked on water. I swear to God, she walked on water. She knew all the talk, and she'd been sober a whole year. And so I got my books. I got a big book, 12 and 12, and I brought a dictionary because I didn't know what words meant. I didn't know what words like humility meant. I didn't know what love meant. I didn't know what fellowship meant. So I had to look stuff up in this dictionary, right? Because all this talk was foreign to me. So I got my car. I went up to Three Rivers, and I rented a motel. And there was no phone there, but there was a bar next door, and it had a phone in there. So I was reading the books, and then I'd always run over to the phone to call my sponsor. And I started in the morning, and, of course, the bar was kind of quiet in the morning. And then as day progressed, it got louder and louder. And finally, at night, about midnight, she goes, "Where the hell are you?" I go, "I'm at this bar here." And she was like, "You're what?" I go, "Yeah, I'm just, they don't have a phone in my room, so I'm..." Anyway, I kind of got sober in this bar and worked the steps out of this rowdy bar that got crazy, you know, late at night. And I remember the feeling that I had after I did my fourth step. I remember the feeling I had. I felt like I had such a weight lifted off my shoulders. I got in my car and I just sped down to Visalia because I called, not my sponsor, but I don't know, some people refer to them as grandpa sponsor or whatever. Anyway, I called this old guy that was like a mentor to me and a spiritual advisor, and he was going to set me up with this person that evening to listen to my fifth step. So that's what I did, and I felt elated almost. I felt like I had always wanted to feel on heroin and coke and alcohol. I felt so good just coming down from that mountain. And I did my fifth step, and I worked the rest of the steps, and oh my God, it's been such a journey and such a wonderful experience. It hasn't always been easy. You know, they say pain is the touchstone to growth, and through pain we grow and all that, and that's true. I always ran from the pain. I always try to run from the pain. I didn't want to feel it. If you're new and you haven't worked the steps and you want to get sober, then please work them. That fourth step is not as scary as I made it out to be. I was terrified of it. And then finally when I did it, it was like really a rebirth. Since I've been sober, I've had a couple of careers. The one I'm in right now, I've actually had for like 21 years. And I'm going to retire this year. I'm so excited because there's so much I want to do and so much I'm looking forward to. But for me to actually be in the same job for that amount of time is a big deal. I can't even tolerate that shit, you know. But for me to stay in one job is that long, and to have a boss, somebody telling me what to do, is huge. And I got to tell you, since I've been in the career that I'm in, I've had the keys to the narcotic box for 20 some years. I have, and I haven't been tempted once. Not once. And I know full well what's in there and what it would do to me. And that is, man, that's a blessing. That's a blessing because I couldn't do my job without that key, you know. And I'm so grateful for that. Not to have that fucking monkey on my back anymore. To have that thing of like, and if you're going through that now where you just, you know, you're not sure what you want to do, but you know, you don't necessarily want what we have, but you don't want what you have anymore. If you just hang in there and stick with us and find some people that, you know, you can talk to and a special person that can be your sponsor or whatever. You won't regret it. You really won't regret it. And it's not the horrible boogeyman that it can be to face life without drinking. If you haven't drank just today, that's a big deal. That's a huge big deal. You know, I've been sober since 1980, and for me it's a way of life now. It's my lifestyle. It's just who I am. I still have feet of clay. I could still get drunk. I know that. But it's to me, it's more of a miraculous thing to be sober a day than it is for 20, 30 years, because it's so fresh for you, and you have so many obstacles to go through and so much beautiful growth to look forward to. But for one day not to drink is tough, and I know that. So please, if you're here, you know, try to hang in there and work the steps. Get a book and read it. Get a book and study it. Actually, my first big book is like highlighted. It's got yellow markers. It's got red markings. It's got folds in it and everything. And I had that book for years before I started studying it. I had it in my car on the floorboard of the back seat, and it rained in my car one time and it got all wet. And I didn't care because I was just, you know, it didn't mean anything to me. And then when I finally started working the steps, it's like, wow, the thing is beat to shit. But it's what I learned out of. It's what I learned out of. And I studied it. You know, it's not a novel. I studied it and read it and tried to apply it to myself and not look for the differences in the book or in people in the meetings and people that I've met. We're all the same in that we have that addiction thing going for us, and that we, if we want to be productive members of society, or even if you don't, I never wanted to be a productive member of society, but I finally got to the point I didn't necessarily want what you want, but I wanted what I didn't want what I had. And This program has given me a beautiful life. I'm actually married to the same person for like 20 years. And that's a big deal for me because I think I kept my moving boxes with him for like 7 years or something. I was always ready to leave. I had my boxes and my newspaper ready to pack my shit up and go at any given moment. And somebody at work said to me, I told her that story. She goes, why did you do that? I go, I don't know. I just never hung around. I mean, I, you know, got what I could and then I was gone. She goes, oh, like that was weird to her. But she's a normie. And then this person at work, I love this gal. She's like one of the most real people I've ever met. We were talking one day and nobody was around and she confided in me that her ex-husband was a speed freak. He was a crankster and he was an asshole. And she was telling me about him. She had five kids that she had on her own and worked and just is an amazing woman, I think. And she said that he would get mad at her because she wouldn't use with him. And she goes, Sammy, could you imagine what would happen to those kids? And I was like, oh, no, I can't even imagine that, you know. And that's the difference right there. Like, her and I agree on everything. I mean, so much. But that's the difference right there is that, I can imagine what would happen. She just couldn't imagine that. And, of course, they ended up getting a divorce because he, you know, I guess he's one of us. I don't know. But she wanted to take care of her children. And that was the main thing in her life and how I respect that. And I didn't do that. You know, I didn't do that. And to this day, it still hurts me. But I'm so grateful that my daughter loves and trusts us, even though she doesn't come visit like she should, because I'm almost 65. And, you know, the child should come to the mother. But whatever. Got that old thinking. Let's see. I hate to talk past what I feel because then I'm just like talking and not saying shit. I really want to thank Julie for asking me. I'm sorry if you came to see Laura from Fresno. You got shit out of luck. You got cheated. But I was so grateful that Julie asked me because this is good for me. When she asked me if I want to do it, I said, of course not. No, I don't want to do that. But I will because they told me never say no. Never say no. And you're kind of screwed when somebody tells you never say no and you really want to stay sober. You kind of got to do whatever it is they're asking you. So I'm here today. I'm grateful. It's Saturday. It's a beautiful day. And it's Founders Day. My God, what a big deal, really. And it's Founders Day all over the world, right? All over the world. What a huge fucking deal. I mean, really, think about it. All over the world. And how blessed we are. How blessed we are. So enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for your time. And thank you, Julie.